This is The Big Web Show, a live talk show about the web and the future of web publishing. This episode of The Big Web Show is sponsored by MailChimp, powerful email marketing. Build and manage your email lists, design killer HTML email campaigns, and send emails with confidence. The free account lets you store up to 500 subscribers, and you can send up to 3,000 emails a month. And their new location-based technology gives you the power to send email campaigns that include geo-targeting, locally timed delivery, auto-translation, and more. Check them out at MailChimp.com/5x5 to take advantage of special deals just for Big Web Show listeners. This is episode number 17 of The Big Web Show. I'm Dan Benjamin, my co-host, the grandfather of the web, Jeffrey Zeldman. How are you, Jeffrey?
I'm a little tired today, grandson.
Welcome back. We didn't do our regularly scheduled show last week because you were taking a much-needed break away from the office, but you've returned and you seem to be in great spirits.
I am in great spirits. I can't tell you how many people wrote to me and said they were depressed and didn't quite know why, and then it occurred to them that they hadn't had a big web show.
That's right. Very true.
Well, I can tell you it was one person, but you know, for every one person who tells you that, there's probably two other people that thought that.
So. Very true. Well, who is our amazing guest today?
We have Tracy Osborne, who I've only had the pleasure of meeting fairly recently. Tracy's a web designer from the Bay Area, and hasn't been in the industry all that long, but seems determined to shake things up and do things. And I was impressed by her spunk. She basically wrote to me a few weeks ago, said, "Hi, you don't know me. I'd like to come by Happy Cog and buy you lunch." And I thought, wow, okay. And then I thought, okay, and I get lots of these, and I usually don't do it, but I thought, well, I'll be courteous. She seems young and impressionable, and you know, and then she just like totally dominated the conversation. She was fantastic. We went out with Tim, and we were both like super impressed. And midway through this lunch, which I had thought, wow, there's nothing to this lunch. I'm just being a nice guy here, you know, being like the nice old man to the young person who's visiting. I was like, whoa, this person is super smart, and I love what she's got to say, and I bet other people would like to hear this as well. So the biggest idea Tracy's known for, or well, will be known for, I suspect, is the startup she's starting, which is for people who want to get married, don't have a lot of money, and are allergic to Comic Sans. Is that correct?
Yes, it's correct.
Tell us the name of your company, or is it a company yet?
No, so it's extremely early stages, and I'm kind of going along the philosophy that the more I talk about it to people, the more feedback I get, and the more likely it's going to happen. So it's extremely early stages, in the middle of trying to find a technical co-founder, but the working name right now is Wedding Type. And it's essentially, in a nutshell, trying to revolutionize wedding invitations on the web, specifically to start out with helping out with do-it-yourselfers and crafty couples, those that don't have access to a lot of professional fonts and web app for them to use, so they can put in their wording, pick the professional fonts, and output a typographically beautiful PDF. And that's just step one. And hopefully I'll grow from there.
So I would, I'm getting married and I'm so excited. I'm not really, I'm just playing along with this. This is called a scenario. I'm getting married and I'm really excited, and I go to your website, and I mean, this is, it's not built yet, but, and I see a bunch of designs and I pick one and then I customize it and I choose. Are you going to have a fairly limited number of templates how do you stop people from designing something ugly with beautiful fonts? Cause you know, just cause the font's beautiful doesn't mean the person using it is a designer.
Yeah. It's hard to explain in terms of, I'm not launching everything at once. So step one is really going to be working with people and their own designs. And I don't know what those designs are. A lot of people go to, say, craft stores and buy template kits. And this is where this idea started. That the template kits can be really beautiful and have great paper and great ornamental things like ribbons and things that people can assemble. But where they usually fall apart is when they have to take it to their own computer and use Word and, say, Comic Sans to create their invitation. So step one is hopefully people have that great paper template background that they bought from a store, and then the PDF will help them with the actual wording and typography. So people who aren't professional or designers can get really beautiful looking invitations. So that's step one. I'm hoping to move into actual printing invitations. So the website will have templates that people can buy and then do the same steps of entering their wording and choosing their fonts. And then they can, you know, press a button and say, hey, send this out, send, you know, 100 invitations to myself so I can send them out, or send them to all my friends and family directly for me. And the
You're not married.
No, I was almost married. That's where the idea started.
Okay. So, yeah. So let's have more backstory. Yeah. Where were you? What hit you over the head? And what made you think, you know, 3 weeks later, hey, that was a good idea. I want to do something with it. How did you recognize that you had a real idea?
It must have been 4 years ago, I think, this idea came. So I've waited a long time to actually capitalize on it. I was thinking I was getting married, and so I went on a whole bunch of wedding forums and lists and everything for people to talk about it and to get information about weddings and be really girly and excited. And one of the things as a designer, I really love looking at invitations that people were designing. People love talking about their invitations and putting them online for other people to see. And it would just break my heart when I saw something that looked, you know, again, that what they built was really, really beautiful. But because they are lacking, you know, the skills to do correct and beautiful typography or the money to buy some of these professional fonts, it was like the whole invitation, in my eyes, as a designer, kind of fell a little flat. And I'm like, there has to be some way of fixing this problem and giving these people that are really enthusiastic about building their own invitations a better way of generating typography.
It will be so awesome if this idea makes you really rich and then you can go back to the person who didn't marry you and say, hi, how's that job going at Burger King? Yeah. I'm on Oprah this week talking about my invention, but not enough about me. You could do. Are you the kind of person that would do that? Are you looking forward to doing
him
that?
Him and I are still friends, so probably not. But it would be good to see all the people that kind of doubted me in terms of building my own startup.
One of the questions that I have for you, Tracy, is how are you going about, and this is people in the chat room are asking this too, how do you go about promoting this? How do you go about getting the word out there about what you're doing and about looking for essentially a CTO? Is there, you know, because obviously you're doing this on a shoestring budget.
Yes.
This isn't, you know, you don't have a lot of public or private funding, right? So it's just you with a great idea and some interest. So how are you going about promoting it and finding people to work with you?
Well, I've been trying to use the power of, say, of social media, I guess. I built my blog, I have the ability to do custom blog posts. And so I kind of make the blog posts look a little more fancy and special and unique from another. And so I built one to talk about the idea and say, you know, I'm looking for a technical co-founder. This is what I'm looking for. Here's my idea. Do you want to work with me? There's a website called Hacker News. Which is run by, it's like news.ycombinator.com. And Y Combinator is the local incubator in the Bay Area and quite famous. And someone found that post and submitted it to Hacker News. And it stayed at the top post for about 24 hours. And I got like 150 emails and, you know, 80 comments on the thing. And this is actually, this Hacker News is pretty much the hub of entrepreneurs and developers and, startup people. So it was incredibly fortuitous for this post to go do as well as it did on this entrepreneur site. And it really kind of catapulted me. This is how it all started. That was the first time I talked about the idea, and I was overwhelmed with lots of people asking to be my co-founder and lots of people who just said that the idea was really awesome. So that really was one of the best things. Best ways for me to find a founder. I've been going through and interviewing people. It's kind of like dating. So I usually go meet someone for coffee and then I try to work with them on a personal project to see how well we work together. Because it's really important that if you're finding a co-founder for your company to have a really good working relationship with them. So I've been trying to go a lot slower than a lot of people think I should. And try to be really careful about finding a technical person to partner with me. And that's actually going really well. I have a very short list of people I want to work with right now.
So obviously then location is pretty important. In other words, yes. Do you think you could do this if you were working out of a little, apartment in Kansas City and didn't have the luxury of going down to local, Starbucks or Blue Bottle and meeting with somebody to talk about it face to face?
If you want to start a company, it's my opinion that you need to move to one of the startup hubs, which is the Bay Area of California, New York City, Boston, Boulder, perhaps Seattle. I mean, if you really, I believe a lot in the power of networking, and the people that you know will help boost yourself. Like, I've been trying to meet as many people as possible beforehand, just with the idea that the more people I know, whenever I have to promote myself, I can use this network to help me out. Obviously, it's worked really well so far for getting that post up on Hacker News. I also have met a lot of entrepreneurs. And if someone's in a random small town, it's going to be a lot harder to connect with the network. And I mean, especially if you just move to the Bay Area, it's a lot more expensive. But there's entrepreneur and startup meetups going on every week. Almost every day of the week, practically, if you look around in San Francisco and on the peninsula and whatnot. So it's extremely important to harness that network of people. The more people you know, the more people are going to be analyzing your idea, giving you feedback, giving you advice. It's an incredible jump starter.
It's very true about San Francisco. New York, I know, is a huge hub too, mm-hmm. but New York's so big and there's so much going on and the population's so huge that you could basically work here. I'm in New York. You could work here for years without really knowing everybody else that's working in the same industry. Mm-hmm. But in San Francisco, it's like if you go to get a crepe or something, you'll see Derek Powazik and Heather Champ and Jeffine. Yeah. And I mean, it's like everywhere you go, it's sort of like this web geek fantasy town in a yeah. way. It's like web geeks and the homeless, basically, I think.
My favorite coffee shop in Mountain View, Ashley, you go upstairs and you find at least 5 different startups of people who don't have an office yet that are just working there on their startups. It's an incredibly fun environment to be in.
That sounds really inspiring. Where did you start? Are you from the Bay Area?
Technically, I mean, I grew up 3 hours north and then I went to college 3 hours south, and that kind of evened out. After I left college, after I completed college, and I started a startup in college as their primary designer, and I left that startup. I was with them for 4.5 years, and decided that after 4.5 years, I really wanted to try my own thing. So then I moved into freelancing for a while, and then freelancing still wasn't going very well. So that's when I was like, okay, now it's time to really run my own business and see how it goes.
It sounds like you're saying if you fail at something, try something more ambitious, which yeah. I mean, which I would agree with, because that's what I did, right? I was like, I failed in journalism and I had a middling career in advertising. And so I just tried the web. And I think yeah. a lot of people in the web have had music careers or dance careers or something. And then, whatever didn't work out for them, they take that set of skills. But you come straight from the web. Everything that you've done has been mm-hmm. web related, correct?
Yeah. I started building web pages when I was 12. So it's been very fun.
Okay. What tools did you use when you were 12?
Notepad.
Notepad. I think it was, there we go.
Yeah. I think it was Annabelle's HTML Help, which is still on the web, was my first resource for building my first table website.
It's interesting to me because, when I was 12, I was still saving up for my first computer that I would actually own. And there was no web, let alone there wasn't even a modem available back in those days. And it's always interesting to me to talk to people who We can say you're in your early 20s, right? That's safe to
25. Yeah.
Okay. It's such a different world. The idea that, I mean, I know that I loved the time that I had to spend on computers when I was 12 years old. It was usually at camp or at a, my uncle's house or something like that, where you could, you know, they actually had a computer you could use. It was this incredible experience that was life changing for me to actually like get computer time. And the idea that, you know, you grew up with this, it's interesting to me to think about the different perspective that you have with the web and things like that always being present and right there. Did you ever consider doing something besides working on the web?
So I went to college and did computer science for a year and a half. So that's very computer and web oriented. I realized I was horrible at programming. And then when I switched to graphic design, I didn't feel like going into web design. I actually wanted to go into package design. So something very handheld and tactile. But what I realized is that I started at my last job at Remelon actually before I graduated. And that's really what catapulted me into web design. My school's web design classes aren't the greatest. I think they're still teaching the WYSIWYG of Dreamweaver. So when I started at Remelon, they were like, okay, here's this thing called CSS that you really need to learn ASAP. There's no one else here that knows web design. So start from scratch and learn as much as possible and help build this business with us. And we were literally in a garage. And it was just, I think at the time, 8 or so friends together working on a startup together. So
I'm sorry, Revlon? It's called,
no, Remelon.
Okay. See, right.
I know, not Revlon.
Yeah. Okay. Please continue. Sorry.
Yeah. I didn't think I was going to be going into web design, but once I started this iterative process of this new company of learning CSS, then learning the entire front end of all the websites that we worked with. And I literally did everything. So design to front end development to analytics to the multivariate testing eventually. I realized how much I loved working with interfaces and making them work and designing them. So then I did this about face and decided that web design is truly what I wanted to go into.
Cool. And never look back.
Pretty much.
And that was when? How long ago?
2006. I graduated in 2007, so I think 2006 is when I started. I mean, sometimes I love being outdoors. I love hiking and going into, you know, running around the mountains and stuff. And so for a while, I was kind of didn't want to go work on a computer. I wanted to try to do something more outdoors or more hands-on. But what I realized is that it's what I feel like I'm good at and is something that I probably should try to explore, especially since it is really fun. It does mean, though, I have to be on the computer, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day.
Yeah, but that's what mobile's for, right? Am I going to be able to design my wedding invitation on my mobile phone while, like, jogging? Because that's really what I want to do. I want to take a bicycle ride. I want to be riding a bicycle, right? And be able to pick a great font. And how as you're planning this business,
yes.
Have you already wireframed it, the user experience, and have you done any testing?
Testing yet. Right now, actually, because I'm still in the middle of finding a technical co-founder, I have everything built in static HTML, and I had to stop myself from building more because I really need to pull it into a templated system, and that's starting to reach the bounds of how much I know. So I took a stop, and I'm learning Python and Django right now. You know, I'm terrible at programming, so I can move the development to a state where I can start doing a lot more development a lot faster once it's in the template system. So testing, not so much. I've done paper testing and brought it to people, shown people comps and got their feedback. And there'll probably be a lot of testing before it actually launches, but that's kind of the extent. I've also done a lot of research and interviews with wedding couples.
Go talk about that a little bit, would you? How do you find the couples and what do you ask them and what do you learn that's pertinent?
The nice thing with the wedding industry is that there's hundreds and hundreds of communities online. That's one thing I really want to pull into my website is the idea about community around wedding invitations and wedding invitation designers and wedding couples who are looking to build their own. But currently, there's a lot of just general communities. And so going to those communities and just trying to talk with people who are designing their invitations, they're already going up and saying, here's my invitation. How about give me some feedback? And so what I was doing is, you know, saying, here's my idea for a company. You know, your invitation looks beautiful, but what if you had access to these fonts and had access to this system to make this easier for you? Would you be willing to pay money for this? And it's majority of my feedback seems to be yes for that. So it seems that's what started, the idea that this could be viable. And once once it's built, the V1, I guess you would say, version 1, once it's built, I'm probably going to go back to those communities and say, you know, I contacted you and asked you whether this is viable. Can you take a look at this product and see this is what you were envisioning? And would this actually be useful to you?
How did you get the people to agree to be interviewed and give you that time? Is it just people are so excited about getting married and wedding community share? No, seriously, like wedding community outgoingness? Like,
I mean, all of them, it wasn't like very formal interviews. It wasn't emails. It was just me responding to threads, you know, just continuing the thread of what they're talking about, kind of just inserting myself into their conversation. It wasn't very formal. It probably should have been formal. So I still have a lot more testing to do, especially once I have a technical founder and we start building. But
and how did you choose the web as your platform versus, say, an iPhone app or a Facebook app?
With iPhone and, well, Facebook, interesting idea. iPhone, really, it's you know, I love iPhone, and it's one of those kind of things I can see coming later, but not first. It's, you know, when you're, you know, trying to type out your invitation, look at a full preview of your invitation or any kind of visual graphics, it's a lot nicer to have a full size preview. So it always just seemed to me natural that it was going to be a website. It's going to be an online web application that people can use, especially since it's going to have to deal with a lot of, really, if I'm going to be working on getting beautiful typography, I need to have it large enough and clear enough so people can see and actually see the difference to prove to them that this is the quality that they're willing to pay for. So I could see if maybe like previews could work on the iPhone eventually, but it definitely would not be the first thing to go on because it needs to be large enough so people can really see the difference.
How will you make money?
Well, the version one, again, is basically you pay for the PDF that is generated. Beyond that, with the actual, if I'm offering templates through the website, then it's going to be through, you know, a markup on the printing of these templates. There's also, I have like a plan of attack document where I have like every single way I can monetize. A lot of people have mentioned doing lead generation for other sites, which I'm probably not going to be doing because I'm trying to really keep the web app focused on simply invitations and not overwhelm people with offers. I feel a lot of problems with current websites with wedding invitations that there's small text, there's ads everywhere, it's hard to read, it's hard to use. And I just want to have something very simple, large text, large inputs, very easy for people to go through and use. So I probably won't be monetizing through lead generation for other like wedding gowns or what other wedding services, but keeping it straight with the PDF generation and then the printing and perhaps a community. I'd also like to bring wedding designers together in a community, kind of like Sortfolio, which is a portfolio website by 37 Signals to showcase web designers. I'd love to showcase invitation designers in the same way to help bring those, give people who are looking for a custom wedding, for a designer that will do custom invitations for them, give them a better way of finding the perfect person for them within their budget rather than just doing, say, random Google searches.
One of the questions that I've got for you, Tracy, is something a couple of the people are asking in the chat room too, but I'll expand it a little bit. And that is, you know, competition exists. Obviously,
yes.
You've addressed the fact that a lot of it kind of stinks. So how do you know that you do something like this and then some of the other sites, the ones that focus on, invitations or party planning or whatever, one of these other sites, or maybe even a big site like Facebook itself, how do you know they don't decide to do something like this and roll it out, all of a sudden and kind of eat your lunch? How do you know that that's not going to happen? What value do you, or how do you respond to that?
Well, I'm starting out in actually an area that doesn't have competition, or at least competition I found, the PDF generation with the typography for people to print from home. So I'm hoping to get that done and do that right. It's not going to be a life changer in terms of the market size that it's there, but hopefully you'll start getting the money rolling in at least a little bit. If I can do that successfully, I can also bring in a lot of community features, like I mentioned before. So forums, people to talk, ways for people to talk with each other, designers. As I said, there's lots of general communities about weddings, but not for wedding invitations. I'm hoping that it'll be a place for designers to come and talk with other people and keep people coming back over and over. Because otherwise, the web application is something people use and then leave. And I want to make it a lot more interactive and useful to people beyond just typing in their invitation words and printing something out. So once that community is in there, and there's hopefully designers and couples that want to talk, talk with others and share their invitations. Once that's in there, hopefully it'll give me a leg up. Once I start adding new features that are, there's competition, there's big competition for, hopefully that community will help me grow a lot larger, faster. And then if those big dogs come in and do the same features, hopefully that community will also help me stay a little bit resilient, since those people are there and hopefully they won't be leaving for this other place, this other, this website that just does the same functionality.
Yeah. In my experience, when the big dogs come in, they don't do as good a job, like Facebook Places versus Gwala and Foursquare. I mean, Gwala and Foursquare are a lot cooler. So,
It's that's what I'm hoping. Obviously time's going to tell. I'm probably going to have to do a lot of pivoting and a lot of, refining my idea as things happen in the future, which I can't expect, but hopefully I can be flexible enough to constantly be updating and keeping ahead of the game. And I also want to try to see if with the wedding templates makers, try to do a partnership with them once I have this functionality built. And hopefully that will help keep myself resilient from any kind of major changes or major dogs, bigger people getting on the scene and taking over.
I mean, that's what they generally do, is buy you anyway, which is not necessarily that great a thing either, because they usually wreck something once they buy it. But but you could do
it. If they won't buy you, at least you know that you're valuable.
Yeah. How you've obviously given thought to marketing via the community and growing the community. Have you thought about any traditional marketing or what?
There's definitely going to be Google and Facebook and a lot of ad testing. This is where, as a designer, a lot of my business, I'm not a business person. I don't have business training. And so I'm kind of learning as I go, is reading as much as possible, learning as much as possible. I mean, the community aspect is something I have experience in. So that's obviously my biggest idea, but do have some experience with AdWords. We'll be going those routes and seeing if they can be profitable. And then hopefully at that point, if I can leverage these two things, I can also bring on another person to help me out with more traditional business skills, more traditional sales skills.
So let me ask you another question here. Why not just, go work for somebody? Why not, you're in the Bay Area, why not spend a year or two or five, learning from somebody awesome there and being involved in another startup and cutting your teeth on somebody else's dime? And if that thing is successful, great. Maybe you make, a few $100,000 bucks and then you can take that and put it into your own thing. Why not, why go this route?
I'm in a great position that I'm not living at home with my parents, but I have no rent. I have my own, I have a house to live in, but I have no rent. It really seemed like this is the time to do it. It's the perfect, money situation. When I left my last job, I made sure I had a large enough savings that I have at least a year of runway. And then having no rent obviously increases that runway. So it was like no turning back at that point. Additionally, it's something the more I talk about it, the more excited I am about it. And I think I'll be so disappointed if I started working at another company on someone else's idea, something I wasn't, perhaps I could be passionate about. But I won't be as passionate about it as if it was my own idea, wanting to see if I could really make something work that I've created. So it seems like the best time is now.
So help us understand, what's a typical day like for Tracy? What do you do? You get up in the morning, you have a great business idea. At some point in the week, you're going to go to a meetup But between that meetup on Thursday night and your first cup of coffee in the morning, what do you do? How do you go about the business of making this vision a reality?
The best thing about being self-employed is waking up at noon. So that's unfortunately what I've gotten the habit of doing.
Okay, so that so saves you 4 hours. There's 4 hours you have to plan for. That's cool. Then what?
Essentially, wake up Sarah fairly in the game, very late in the day, jump on the computer, answer all the emails I have. I'm trying to be as nice as possible to everyone on the internet, even though I've been getting a lot more emails than I used to. Trying to respond to everybody. And usually at that point, I've been trying to go to a lot of meetups and continue talking to people, also meeting with co-founders, working on projects. And so that usually happens about mid-afternoon on a typical day is I usually leave. And if I'm not meeting with someone, I actually will leave and go to the coffee shop and try to get a different environment to start working. Because it can be very distracting at home too. I have a cat, I have a garden, I love cooking. And so all these things distract me instead of working on a computer. So I'll generally go to a coffee shop and work until mid-evening, after which I usually come home and then continue working until about 2 a.m. And by working, I mean there's a lot of non-working time. I spend a lot of time on Hacker News. I will do a lot of research. Again, right now I'm learning Python and Django, so I'm not working directly on the startup, but usually I try to spend as much time as possible learning about something I don't know that will help the startup, or at least keeping my general activity to something, basically general activity around something that'll help the startup.
How did you choose Python and Django?
It's kind of arbitrary. Yeah, it's kind of arbitrary. The person that really, really inspired me to go through with all this is my boyfriend. And I'll say, you know, I was thinking about this last night, is that the people closest to you are kind of sometimes some of the best motivators. He started his own company. And watching him go through and start his own company, he joined Y Combinator. It was really inspiring and seeing that, oh yeah, this is really how this can be done. He's also one of the best developers I know. And he currently works with Python and not Django, but he works with pylons. But talking with him, also talking with other people in Y Combinator, other startup people, it's usually Rails or Python. And so being that Andre, my boyfriend, is working in Python, and I have to choose a language to start working on, I decided Python because then I can have him help me out in any kind of problems that I might have with it.
Who you say you've got a handful of people in mind, and I'm not going to ask you who they are, obviously, but but what are you looking for in your first partner? What qualities? You said you spend a little time together to see if you get along.
Yeah.
Obviously. You don't want to work with someone that you find unpleasant to be around.
Yeah.
But what are you looking for? Like a lot of work experience, success. What are you looking for?
Before I even meet with them, I try to determine whether they're curious, whether they like working on random projects, things they do for fun and not for money. I personally have a lot of small websites out there. There's something I just made actually a week ago. It's called colorblendy.com. And it's just a simple application for people to blend two colors and kind of copy the Photoshop, multiply, dodge, blending modes, but in a web app so you don't have to open Photoshop. And I'm looking for people who are interested in building just random little things that'll help them out, not for money, but just for fun, and have that kind of that curiosity, that kind of that drive. So that's before I even meet with them. I'll try to see what kind of projects they work on. Meeting with them is just seeing if they're a pleasant person, whether we have good conversation, you know, what kind of questions they ask, how they answer my questions. And usually at this point, a lot of people seem to think like, you know, oh, that person's really nice. We can start working together. But I actually had an experience. I moved on to working on a small 24-hour project, which speaking of, I've been doing all my 24-hour projects at the 10K apart, 10K apart contest. Because it seemed to work out really very well. To say, hey, there's already this contest on the web. Let's just work together on something really, really small and get a project going. So I worked with this one guy, and we actually had this really horrible working, we just couldn't work together. So I was really happy I went and actually met with him to work with him because he was my top choice. But then once we worked together, it just kind of fell flat in its face. I've met since then with more people that I've worked together a lot better. So it was really important. It's really, I'm really happy I did that, because without seeing how that person and I worked together and we started working on the startup together, things could have failed before it got off the ground just on basis of a bad working environment.
So Tracy, what happens when somebody, you know, in part of your quest here, what if somebody shows up and says, listen, you know, maybe they're 10, 15, 20 years older. They say, listen, I've done these startups. This is a great idea. You've got the creative talent and the drive needed for this. I'll run this thing, you know, and we'll make this happen. You know, I'll give you all the stuff that you need, but you know, I want a 50% stake in it, or 60, or maybe 70% stake, but you know, I've got $1 million bankroll. So, you know, you can start getting a salary now. I mean, is that the kind of thing you're hoping for? Or is that the kind of thing that you're maybe terrified of?
That's kind of interesting. I mean, that hasn't happened yet. I don't quite know what I would say. The stake part, I mean, equity means nothing before, you know, you don't know. I don't know if this is going to sell. I don't know if it's going to make money. So equity really doesn't mean anything. So I shouldn't have to worry about what equity percentages, but it seems interesting question.
Well, it's something that I've seen yeah. a lot of that in the time that I've done startups where, you yeah. know, you're trying to raise money and people say, well, you know, yeah, I'll give you some money, but I really think I could run this better than you. And I mean, they might be right, by the way.
You know, and I might, one of those kind of things is that if I work with them and we work really well together, then it might work out. It just like the many people I'm meeting right now that don't say have millions of dollars and they work out, they don't, you know, it's, if someone's willing to work with me, then it's might as well. And if we do a small project together and it really works out, then, you know, might as well run with it. If the person wants to invest in me without and take equity just to give myself a salary without working with me or while working on the product, I might be more hesitant. I've heard a lot of horror stories about investors who invest a lot of money and take a lot of equity from the company, and then suddenly they're the people who are guiding the company and telling them which ways they want to go. And a lot of them are very focused purely on profit, where when I want to have a good user experience, I want to have great support, you know, kind of like Zappos, whereas like, you know, the whole experience of Zappos is really awesome, even if it's a small detriment to their actual profits. And so just straight investments, I'm kind of wary of, because I know, I'm pretty sure that I can bootstrap this as much as I can. And it seems like that's the best solution in terms of getting the best company out.
So we've got a question coming in from the chat room from Doug Logan. He asks, how do you plan on working with your tech partner? Are you going to pay them or just give them a percentage? And it's a good question. I mean, we've got a lot of people listening who may love this idea and they may want to contact you. And, you know, what are they going to get out of this thing?
It depends on the situation. I mentioned Y Combinator, and that's actually something I'm very interested in doing. And Y Combinator, the application's open and the program runs from January to March, and it's a very intense program. And what I've been working with, the people I've been meeting with, is that if they have a job currently, I can't pay them unless they really want to. But generally, hopefully, I wouldn't pay them and they'd work on it part-time as a side project while they're going the full-time job and paying the bills. And if we go into Y Combinator, Y Combinator actually throws, I believe, for two partner company, it's $17,000 to help cover the expenses for 17 months. At that point, hopefully that co-founder can quit their job and then join me full time in the Y Combinator program. So that's what I'm kind of hoping for, is, you know, the person's either solvent enough, just like me, to work with no income for just a little bit and then hopefully get into this program. If you don't get into the program, then I might look into angel investments or small investments just to keep things going if we don't have income at that point. But if I met someone who said that, you know, I would love to work with you full time, but I need to have a salary, that could happen too. My runway is enough that I could afford to pay someone.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yay. Any more questions?
I think we're getting ready to wrap. I think we lost Dan Benjamin.
Now I'm here.
Okay.
He just became very meditative.
No, I was just thinking, and I you know, it's so interesting to me listening to somebody, you know, 25 years old, talk about this world that you live in, which, you know, 10, 15 almost years ago for me, just didn't really exist in the same way. Yeah. I mean, San Francisco is very much San Francisco the way it is now, but the climate and the community that's there and the idea that, you know, that it's a reasonable proposition for somebody to go and do something like this today is it's pretty exciting. And it just, I think, reflects, Jeffrey, on how things have changed. What do you think?
I totally agree. I think one of the reasons that I wanted to have Tracy on the show is just I love the way the web, which is only commercially speaking, existed for 15 years and only been really huge for maybe 10 years, has completely changed what people are able to do. When I was 25 and creative, I had to work for somebody or try to sell, you know, I tried to sell my music and I tried to sell stuff I wrote and nobody really wanted it. I mean, back then, if you were kind of a creatively motivated person, you tried to become an artist. And then when you failed at that, you would try to get into advertising or something as like, right. You know, and nothing against any of that stuff. That stuff's all wonderful. But, and, you know, there are people who love advertising and are great at it. But I think the web gives a profoundly different outlet to people and in a way lets people be much more, if they're motivated and willing to do the work, I think, and, you know, it lets people who have an idea take charge of their own destiny in a way we couldn't before. So I find that very exciting. And, yeah. And that's what I was thinking when we were sitting at the little coffee shop when I met you. And I was just like, wow, this is great. This is an inspiring story. And I think there's a lot of stories like that out there, but there could be a lot more. So I wanted for you to have the chance to come on the show and talk about what you're doing. And I am really grateful that you did that.
Well, I think one last thing is that for anyone who wants to start their own business, the nice thing about the web right now is that there's tons of resources to help you out. Just the incubators, there's lots of these companies that just revolve around helping new companies grow big. And then just articles and resources and people on the internet, the web has made it really all possible to, you know, for anyone who's wanting to start their own company, just go ahead and do it.
Agreed. That's really wonderful. Tracy, thank you very much for coming on our show today.
Yep. Thank you very much. And that, I think, does it for our episode. So thanks again, guys. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. And we'll see y'all again next week.
All right. Thank you.
Wave with two hands. Wave with two hands.
Thanks again to my co-host, Jeffrey Zeldman, and to our guest, Tracy Osborne. You can check out her work at limedaring.com. Also, thanks to our sponsor, MailChimp, for making this show possible. Check them out at MailChimp.com/5x5 to get special deals just for you guys. And speaking of you, thanks for listening. You can hear previous episodes of this show and learn more about all the other shows we produce at 5x5.tv. And if you enjoyed this episode, consider rating it on iTunes. It's the best way to help new listeners find out about the show. This is Dan Benchman for The Big Web Show. We'll see you again next week.